time for us to begin. If you would please open your Bibles to 2 Chronicles chapter 33. 2 Chronicles chapter 33. We're continuing our study of the kings. We know that the northern kingdom has already fallen. And we're reading now about the fall of the southern kingdom. If you're following along, which I believe most of you are, you can follow the account to the end of the second book of Chronicles and to the end of the second book of Kings. And you'll then be reading about the fall of the southern kingdom as they are taken captive by the Babylonians. And then after that, of course, we see Daniel and Ezekiel, Jeremiah. These are the prophets that live in that time frame. Jeremiah would be first. And so we're going to be talking about some references to those, but unfortunately we're not going to go and study those books. We're going to continue to study the history and geography of the Bible instead of the details of Daniel and Ezekiel and much of Jeremiah. We've talked about the reign of King Hezekiah in the southern kingdom. We've talked about his choice to follow God and his sparing of the people through his leadership, his dependence upon God. And we saw how that the city of Jerusalem was spared. But we did note that Hezekiah made a very tragic mistake toward the end of his reign. He showed all of his house to the emissaries from Babylon, and Isaiah the prophet told him that the time will come when everything that you have, everything that's in the Lord's house, will be taken to Babylon. And, of course, that's kind of how we ended the study of Hezekiah. And then we talked about Manasseh, his son, who reigned for 55 years. And we studied primarily from the text of 2 Chronicles chapter 32 and on into chapter 33. And we noted that Manasseh was an exceedingly wicked king. Compared to his father, Hezekiah, one of the best of the kings of the southern kingdom, and now his son, one of the worst kings of the southern kingdom. And we saw how that he built the altars and set up the idolatrous places of worship that his father, Hezekiah, had torn down. We noted as well that God said that he would judge Judah by the same standard that he used with Ahab and Samaria in 2 Kings chapter 21, verse 13, as it were. Now, in our study tonight, you see on the board, we're going to begin in 2 Chronicles chapter 33, beginning with verse 21, where we read of the son of Manasseh. His son was named Ammon, or Ammon, as some pronounce it. It says in verse 21 that Ammon was 20 and 2 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 2 years in Jerusalem, and he did that which was evil in the sight of Jehovah, as did Manasseh his father. And Ammon sacrificed unto all the graven images which Manasseh his father had made and served them. And he humbled not himself before Jehovah as Manasseh his father had humbled himself, but this same Ammon trespassed more and more. And his servants conspired against him and put him to death in his own house. But the people of the land slew all them that had conspired against Ammon, and the people of the land made Josiah, his son, king in his stead. Now, as we talk about the list of the kings, here we have them, beginning with Hezekiah. We wanted to remember that Hezekiah is a turning point. If you're trying to outline the kings, in, at least in your mind, and try to keep them in somewhat of an order, you want to mark Hezekiah as a turning point, because Israel, the northern 10 tribes, they fell during the time when Hezekiah was reigning in Jerusalem in Judah. So it's kind of the beginning of a new section here as we talk about Hezekiah. We also want to note Josiah. We'll discuss him in just a moment. But our study tonight is about Ammon, or we're going to begin to talk about Ammon in this account of the Chronicles. Now, one of the things that we saw about Manasseh, though he is generally described as a very wicked king, what did he do down toward the end of his reign?
Tried to undo some of the things that he had done, and he really wasn't very successful.
Well, he wasn't. The consequence of sin sometimes is horrible. Even though we have changed, maybe we don't believe or practice what we have, sometimes we've set the stage for others to follow. And so it was with Manasseh. And even though Manasseh humbled himself, he couldn't speak on behalf of all the people. He got a ball rolling that he couldn't stop. And sometimes we do the same thing. And then later we realize the horrible mistakes that we've made, but it's too late to undo what we've done. Now, Ammon was 22 when he began to reign, and he reigned for 2 years. But he was wicked, but he didn't change like Manasseh. He was wicked right on up to the time that his own servants conspired to kill him, and then the people of the land killed those people, and Josiah then was appointed to be king. Now, in our study tonight, you see we're going to spend a good bit of time talking about Josiah. Josiah is perhaps the very best king that the southern kingdom had. Now, in our charts, as you see, we tried to identify some of those who were contemporary with these kings as far as the prophets are concerned. And we note that Zephaniah and Nahum and Jeremiah and Habakkuk wrote during this period of time. Nahum in particular wrote concerning the fall of Nineveh, which of course would identify us the fall of the Assyrian Empire. Now, Habakkuk, you will recall, the substance of his book is that the people of God in the southern kingdom are doing horrible things. They're worshiping idols. And Habakkuk's question was, how long, God, are you going to put up with that? And God answered Habakkuk with a peculiar statement. You wouldn't believe it even if I was to tell you. But he went on and told him anyway that he was going to raise up the Chaldeans, the Babylonians. And Habakkuk's response to that was in shock and amazement. How can you use the Babylonians to punish your people? They're far worse than we are. And God told Habakkuk, I have a plan for them too. We know that he was going to raise up the Medes and the Persians and conquer the Babylonian Empire. Now, that's some of what we're reading about here very briefly in the account of the kings. But when we get over into some of these prophets, we see some details. Now, when we study the condition that existed in the southern kingdom during the time of the writing of Jeremiah, we're going to see that Jeremiah wrote during the time of the last of the kings of the southern kingdom. And we want to pause and notice some of the things that Jeremiah had to say about the practices and the attitude of the people during this time frame, down toward the end of the existence of that kingdom. Now, let's back up.
The question on a couple of slides ago, but you don't have to back up.
Okay.
That one. Is that all the Webb family line?
Oh, yes. Yes. When we look at Judah, we're following the line of one family all the way from David. Just didn't have room on this chart to go from Hezekiah up, but it's the family line all the way from David. Yeah. Any other questions or comments? That's a good question. Any other questions? Yes.
And that's because the scepter without the mark of Judah.
That's right. And that's found in... Yeah, in the Old Testament. In Genesis chapter 49, verse 10. Genesis chapter 49.
Verse 10.
Now you asked me that just to see if I knew. This is the test. All right. What we want to know, to begin to learn about Josiah is not only was he one of the very best, if not the best king that Judah ever had, but look at how young he was, not only when he became king, but when he made some major changes of the practices of the people of Judah. In 2 Chronicles chapter 34, it tells us that he was 8 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 31 years in Jerusalem. You'll note in verse 2 that he did that which was right in the eyes of Jehovah, and walked in the ways of David his father, and turned not aside to the right hand or to the left. For in the 8th year of his reign, Randy, how old would that make him?
16
years old. The 8th year of his reign, while he was yet young, he began to seek after the God of David his father. And in the 12th year of his reign, how old would that make him? 20 years, he began to purge Judah and Jerusalem from the high places and the Asherim and the graven images and the molten images. And they break down the altars of the Balaam in his presence, and the sun images that were on high above them he hewed down, and the Asherim and the graven images and the molten images he brake in pieces and made dust of them and strode it upon the graves of them that had sacrificed unto them, and he burnt the bones of the priests upon their altars and purged Judah and Jerusalem. Now I want you to see what this man is doing. At a very young age, 16 years old, he began to seek after God. 20 years old. Look at the major reforms that he's making in Judah. Yes?
Two questions, I guess, maybe really one. Who was the prophet at this time? And since he's so young, do you think maybe the prophet was advising him?
All I could do on that would be to speculate. I don't know. Whether or not a prophet took him under his wing and that sort of thing. We do know that a woman by the name of Hilda was a prophetess during this time. Jeremiah was a prophet during this time, as well as Zephaniah, who had a great deal to say about this. But as to whether or not any one of those took Josiah under his wing or not, I don't know.
That seems rather incredible. You know, his dad being evil. He's doing really great. I mean, at a very young age, so that's why I asked the question.
Yes, I understand. You'll note in verse 3, it tells us that he sought after God. I find that an interesting statement. He sought after God. So we don't see somebody just pounding things into his head. Here's a man that's seeking God. And no doubt, much of his information came from these prophets. But he sought God, and we need to underscore that. Yes, Randy?
Well, now the southern kingdom would still have the writings. They still have
yes.
They have the law of Moses.
Yes, but that raises an interesting question. When we get over to the reign of Jehoiakim, that's what, maybe two kings down, or one? Let me look. We've got Josiah, and then Jehoahaz, and then Jehoiakim. Yes, two kings down. It was during the time of Jehoiakim that the prophet was sent to him, Jeremiah, with instructions from God. And when he delivered them, evidently it was during a cold month and he had a fire built. And he took a penknife and cut it up and threw it in fire. Now, you talk about having the writings of God. It makes you wonder what their attitude toward them was. Well, we don't have to wonder much. During the reign of Jehoiakim, he didn't want it. He cut it up, threw it in the fire, and God told Jeremiah, go back. Write it again and take it back to him. Read it. Just hear it.
Well, I just was thinking when it says he walked in the way of ways of his father David, and then verse 3 says he had to seek the God of his father David. We have all the writings of David. Psalms.
Well, yes, as far as them existing, yes, but consider what was in the temple where all this stuff was supposed to be.
Idols.
So it raises the flag. Well, what happened to all of that?
Actually, Manasseh took some of the gods out of that was one of his good things at the end. He removed the foreign gods back in 33:15.
Right.
The foreign gods, the idols, and the house of the Lord, as well as the altars which he built on the mountain. And set up the altar of the Lord, sacrificed peace offerings. Nevertheless, verse 17, the people still sacrificed in the high places.
Right.
So the temple should have been cleansed by them, but then I don't know if Ammon would have been more back.
Well, it tells us he was worse than Manasseh.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's all I know. And one of the reforms of Josiah was to repair the temple, and we'll see how that he cashed out these idols. So, in all probability, much of that had been put back.
I guess I'm just thinking that, you know, my first thought was kind of what David thought. Somebody must have taken him under their wing if he, at the age of 8 or the age of 16, decided to seek after God.
Yeah.
He could have had somebody helping him, or he could have just gotten into the right. I mean, the Word of God contains a lot.
Yeah, that novel thought. Yes. Yes. And to determine with any degree of certainty how that all transpired would just simply be speculation. I don't know. I just don't know. Now, I do know that Jeremiah had a lot to say. Maybe Josiah was listening. But Jeremiah was very bold in much of what he said. Yes.
They found the book of the law when they were repairing the temple.
That's right.
So,
where was it?
About to.
Lost.
It's lost. We don't know where it was.
But it looks like he had other sources. He must have been there. Either there were summaries, there were like cliff notes hanging around, or he was talking with somebody who knew, because he was on the right track even 10 years before he found the law.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, I mean, even with that, I mean, you see people that even had people that were taking them under their wing, and they still turn to other things.
Right.
So it doesn't, I mean, it's. I think it is pretty cool that this that he specifically went to God and started following his ways and searching him out. But at the same time, people had God and had prophets that were telling them exactly what they needed to know, and they still turned away and did idol stuff, and so.
Well, I think the thing that we need to be impressed with is the statement in verse 3, that while he was yet young, he began to seek after the God of David, his father. We see initiative on the part of Josiah to seek God. It's not as if that somebody had placed him in an environment or circumstance that isolated him. He's got all these idols about, and he deliberately seeks something better than that. And then when he was 20 years old, he purged the idols from Judah and Jerusalem and from the cities of Manasseh, Ephraim, Simeon, and Naphtali. And if you'll notice in the text, we've got a long listing of things that he did in getting rid of these altars to the idolatrous or the idols. In verse 5, I must ask you, it says that he burnt the bones of the priests upon their altars and purged Judah and Jerusalem. Why did he do that? Burnt the bones of the priests of these idols.
Desecrate
the idols. I mean the altars. That's right. Desecrate the altars.
I'm always struck by the fact that so many times you read somebody tore down the altars and they took down this and they took down that. He didn't just do that. He destroyed them completely.
That's right.
Ground them up.
That's right. Now, there's a lesson in that. Sometimes it's not enough just to put a crack in it. You've got to get rid of it. Just completely eject it from your life. And when we come into the New Testament, there's a passage that I like to preach on, as you well know, Titus chapter 2, beginning in verse 11. We note that the grace of God hath appeared, bringing salvation unto all. And what did he do? Teaching us or instructing us to the intent that denying ungodliness and worldly lust, we should live soberly, righteously, and godly in this present world. There's a whole study in that expression, denying. It's something you don't do by accident, and it means to completely disassociate yourself with it.
And this is exactly what the when the Israelites first came into the land, they didn't completely
deny. No, they did not. They did not. But to illustrate this idea of completely separating, denying these things, we look at the example of Peter when the Lord said, before the cock crows, you'll deny that you know me. And what was it that Peter said? Three times. He denied any association with the Lord. I know not the man, and began to curse and swear. Now that's what it means to deny. Now when we come over to Titus 2, I'm not going to preach that sermon, but when we come over to Titus chapter 2, it is a deliberate, intentional effort to deny any place in my life for these practices. And the same thing here with idolatry. If we're struggling with something, in other words, if you have a problem drinking alcohol, it's probably not a good idea to meet your friends after work at the local bar. You see what I'm saying? Completely disassociate yourself with those things that present a problem. And that's what Josiah was doing. He was purging the idols, desecrating the places of worship, and restoring temple worship. When you drop down just a little bit farther in the text, Randy, it says, now in the 18th year of his reign, when he had purged the land and the house, he sent Shaphan, and it identifies a number of characters, to repair the house of God, of Jehovah his God. How old is he?
26.
He's 26. You see that on the board. He's 26. You did the math, though, didn't you? Yeah. Yeah, I already did it. It's on the board. But he's 26 years old, and he's now repairing the temple, which tells us the condition that the temple, for the most part, was in. And here's the point that you were making, Jenny. Hilkiah the priest, when they go in to do all the work, he found a copy of the law of Moses there in verse 14. It says, when they brought out the money that was brought into the house of Jehovah, Hilkiah the priest found the book of the law of Jehovah given by Moses. And Hilkiah answered, verse 15, and said unto Shaphan the scribe, I found the book of the law in the house of Jehovah. And Hilkiah delivered the book to Shaphan, and Shaphan carried the book to the king, and moreover brought back word to the king, saying, all that was committed to thy servants they are doing, and they have emptied out the money that was found in the house of Jehovah. Drop down to verse 18, or verse 19. And it came to pass, when the king had heard the words of Jehovah, or the words of the law, that he rent his clothes. What's wrong with Josiah? Oh man, we're bad off. We've missed the mark completely. And if you look at verse 21, he tells him to go and inquire of Jehovah for me and for them that are left in Israel and in Judah concerning the words of the book that is found. For great is the wrath of Jehovah that is poured out upon us because our fathers have not kept the word of Jehovah to do according to all that is written in this book. Now I want to pause right there. Josiah makes a good observation. Josiah is interested in reform. He's trying to restore what was. But why are conditions in the southern kingdom expected to degrade and get worse? He's angry with them because of what the fathers did before them. And you just back up and look at what Ammon did. Look at what Manasseh did. Skip Hezekiah and go back to his father. And what we see is idolatry being practiced by these kings in Judah.
The word says, discovered the lost book of the law, that the five books of Moses?
Likely. Yes, because when we look at Jeremiah, Jeremiah was contemporary with Josiah.
So they're not only reading the beginning of the law,
yes. Oh, yes. Yes, I would think so. Yes, as well as the commandments of what they're supposed to be doing. And Josiah recognizes we're not doing that. Any other comments or questions? Yeah. So look at what Josiah has to work with now and the attitude with which he approaches this. Now, reading the law. I want to pause for a moment and talk about this. You know, sometimes we don't read. We've got this book, and I've got a whole library of books back there. And sometimes I fuss at myself, and then all of the material that's available on the computer, research material, and commentaries, and this and that, that is
linked to what the Bible said. And we study, we read all of that, you see. But how much time do we actually spend reading what the law says, what God's Word says? Now, that troubles me. Troubles me with me sometimes. And I fuss at myself about that. And say, no, just forget what that fellow said. Read from the text. And sometimes we need to do that. Now, I understand that research materials and maps and so forth, we use them and do in this class. They're very helpful. But don't expose yourself to those kind of things, to the neglect of reading from the law. Turn, if you will, to the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 31. Deuteronomy chapter 31, we'll drop down to the right-hand page, the right-hand column, right at the bottom of that. It says in verse 9, it says, "And Moses wrote this law, and delivered it unto the priests, the sons of Levi, that bear the ark of the covenant of Jehovah, and unto all the elders of Israel. And Moses commanded them, saying, at the end of every 7 years, in the set time of the year of release, in the Feast of Tabernacles, when all Israel is come to appear before Jehovah thy God, in the place which he shall choose, thou shalt read this law before all Israel in their hearing. Assemble the people, the men and the women and the little ones, and thy sojourner that is within thy gates, that they may hear, and that they may learn, and fear Jehovah your God, and observe to do all the words of this law, and that their children who have not known may hear, and learn to fear Jehovah your God as long as ye live in the land, whether ye go over the Jordan to possess it." Now keep in mind, Moses was writing this before they ever went into the land, before they conquered it, before Joshua. And as he's writing this, they were to read the law of God to everybody that was inside their borders, to the sojourners, to the children, to all those who had not heard it before. Read it to them. Now let me ask you, do you like to be read to? Kind of like the old boy said, he didn't like to be read to, especially when it wasn't read right. Well, just to stand or sit and listen to somebody read. Sometimes we're not very content about that. We don't want to just be read to. But have you noticed how much emphasis is placed in Scripture on simply reading the Scriptures? Read it. Now, after the Babylonian captivity, after the Medes and the Persians are in power and conquer the Babylonians, when we read in the book of Nehemiah, his work was to come back to the land of Canaan and to rebuild the walls around the city of Jerusalem. I want you to observe that Ezra's and Nehemiah's work was not just to be construction laborers. The people had to be educated. In the land of captivity, this reading the law, they'd not been doing that. Now, how would you like to go for 70 years and not know what it says? Never read. Never. Well, when you look at Nehemiah chapter 8, the people need to know what it says. In Nehemiah chapter 8, beginning in verse 1, it says, "And all the people gathered themselves together as one man in the broad place that was before the water gate, and they spake unto Ezra the scribe to bring the book of the law of Moses, which Jehovah had commanded to Israel. And Ezra the priest brought the law before the assembly, both men and women, and all that could hear with understanding upon the first day of the seventh month." Verse 3 says, "And he read therein before the broad place that was before the water gate from early morning until midday in the presence of the men and the women and those that could understand. And the ears of all the people were attentive to the book of the law. And Ezra the scribe stood upon a pulpit of wood." Drop to verse 5. "And Ezra opened the book in the sight of all the people, for he was above all the people. And when he opened it, all the people stood up." What does Ezra do? He reads from early morning till midday. And the people respond attentively. They listen to what Ezra the scribe is reading. When you drop down into the middle of verse 7, you read about certain men who caused the people to understand the law. And the people stood in their place. And they read in the book, in the law of God, distinctively, and they gave the sense so that they understood the reading. Would you call that preaching? They read. They read. They taught. So they know what God had said. Now, what was the response during the days of Nehemiah? We'll have occasion to come back and revisit this. But the people learned some things. The people weep. Why? What have they been doing? They haven't been obedient. The law said that you were not to marry and intermarry with those nations or nationalities round about. Well, they've been doing that for a long time. And now Nehemiah is reading, or Ezra is reading to them and telling them, you're not supposed to have these marriages going on. So what must be done about it? You've got to undo that. Now, we read that and we say, oh, that sounds awful. But you just go back and read Ezra chapter 9 and chapter 10 and see what they were to do about these marriages that were unlawful. When you come back to Nehemiah chapter 13, look at what Nehemiah did. When one of the priests had married the daughter of one of the enemies of the people of God. In Nehemiah chapter 13, I see some of you turning, so we'll just have to look at it. In verse 28, it says, one of the sons of Joada, the son of Elisha, the high priest, was son-in-law to Sanballat the Horonite. Now, what is it that the son of the priest has done? He married the daughter of one of the boldest and greatest enemies of God's people. And Nehemiah said, therefore, I chased him from me. I chased him away. Now, you might get the idea that Nehemiah is upset with these people. Well, what's happened? They're ignorant. Now, ignorance causes us to do a lot of things, does it not? We don't know. Sometimes we know and we just rebel, but sometimes we just don't know. And what do? We follow the way of the world and their reasoning, and we wind up destroyed eternally with the world. And you don't want that. None of us want that. Now, when we read about the prophetess, Huldah, she has some very interesting words for Josiah. Turn back, if you will, to the account of the Chronicles in 2 Chronicles chapter 34. 2 Chronicles chapter 34. In 2 Chronicles 34, beginning at verse 22, it says, so Hilkiah and they whom the king had commanded went to Huldah the prophetess, the wife of Shalem, and you can pronounce all of those names if you like. I'm going to drop down to verse 23. It says, and she said unto them, thus saith Jehovah the God of Israel, tell ye the man that sent you unto me. Thus saith Jehovah, behold, I will bring evil upon this place and upon the inhabitants thereof, even all the curses that are written in the book which they have read before the king of Judah, because they have forsaken me and have burned incense unto other gods, that they might provoke me to anger with all the works of their hands. Therefore is my wrath poured out upon this place, and it shall not be quenched. But unto the king of Judah, who sent you to inquire of Jehovah, thus shall ye say to him, thus saith Jehovah, the God of Israel, as touching the words which thou hast heard, because thy heart was tender, and thou didst humble thyself before God, when thou heardest his words against this place and against the inhabitants thereof, and hast humbled thyself before me and hast rent thy clothes and wept before me, I also have heard thee. And saith Jehovah, behold, I will gather thee to thy fathers, and thou shalt be gathered to thy grave in peace. Neither shall thine eyes see all the evil that I will bring upon this place and upon the inhabitants thereof. And they brought back word to the king. How is Josiah blessed?
Here's the good news, here's the bad news.
Yeah.
The good news is you're going to die. You're not going to see it. You're not going to see what I'm going to do with this.
That's the good news.
The good news is you're not going to see it.
Yeah. The bad news, judgment is coming. It's coming.
Now, it can be postponed for Josiah's sake, but the people have rebelled. They've worshipped idols, and there are consequences for that kind of thing. Now, we talked about some of Josiah's reforms there, beginning in verse 4. We know that he defiled Topheth in the Valley of the Sons of Hinnom to stop the worship of Molech. We saw how that he filled those altars with the bones of men. And we saw that he destroyed the high places in Jerusalem that Solomon had built. We want to make note of that. You recall in 1 Kings chapter 11, beginning in verses 6 and 7. I was about to forget that point. In 1 Kings 11, verses 6 and 7, that Solomon had married all these women and had all these concubines, but he had built places of worship for the idols that these women worship. And now we find Josiah, direct lineage, Josiah tearing all that down. Not right. Not right. And so he's destroying all of that. In fact, he destroyed the shrine to the golden calf at Bethel, as you'll go back to the account in the Kings, in 1 Kings chapter 13, and read there where calf worship was first introduced by Jeroboam. So these have been destroyed. Chapter 23 of 2 Kings, beginning in verse 17, tells us about that. And also we want to note, one other thing on that, I forgot. Down here at the bottom, Assyria was in the process of falling to the Medes and to the Babylonians. Pharaoh Necho of Egypt was also an enemy of God's people, and we're going to see the place of that just a little bit, time permitting, as we progress through these kings. But Assyria is on its way down. Remember that it was Assyria that had destroyed the northern 10 tribes, and now we've got the Babylonian Empire on the rise, and Assyria is about to fall. Now, moving on to this chart, we saw that he burned the bones of men upon the altars, and we've answered the question why. He's defiling the altars, and we noted that when he was the ripe old age of 26 years old, when he's purging the land of all of the idols and idol worship, look what else he did. He kept the Passover. And it's been a long time since the Passover has been kept. You can go back to Exodus. You want to know what he was reading? Exodus chapter 12, where we read about the Passover. And Josiah has learned some things that God wants them to do, and they've not been doing it. In fact, look at how long it has been. If you look in the text of chapter 35, beginning at verse 16, it says, "So all the service of Jehovah was prepared the same day to keep the Passover and to offer burnt offerings upon the altar of Jehovah according to the commandment of the king of King Josiah. And the children of Israel that were present kept the Passover at that time and the feast of unleavened bread 7 days. And there was no Passover like to that kept in Israel from the days of Samuel the prophet. Neither did any of the kings of Israel keep such a Passover as Josiah kept. And the priests and the Levites and all Judah and Israel were present, and the inhabitants of Jerusalem." Ripe old age of 26 years old. And look at what he's done. Yes.
So does that read that they didn't keep it at the same quality that he did? Or no one's kept it since Samuel? Because that would be before David and Solomon and God.
It's not saying that no one has kept it since Samuel, although the Passover has not been kept in a long, long time. But no one has kept the Passover like Josiah.
To his quality,
all the way back to Samuel. Now, we're going to see why in just a little bit when we study about what Josiah and those who were contemporary with him did in the observance of this Passover.
To put that in perspective, in counting the years, that would, in counting from our day, that would be like the pilgrims.
Yeah.
That's how long ago that would be.
Yeah.
A long time
since the days of Samuel that it's been observed like this. Now, you've got a legitimate question. just how was it observed? Look at 2 Chronicles 35 and look at verse 7. 2 Chronicles 35, verse 7. It says, "And Josiah gave to the children of the people of the flock, lambs, and kids, all of them for the Passover offerings unto all that were present, to the number of 32,300 bullocks." Look at what Josiah did. Observing the Passover with 33,000 bulls. That's a lot of meat. You look further. When you read of the rulers of the house of God, in verse 8, it says that they gave 2,600 small cattle and 300 oxen. Now the mathematicians in the family, start thinking about these numbers, please. And when you read just a little bit further, beginning in verse 9, it says, "Kaniah also, and Shemaiah, and Nathaniel, and his brethren, and Hashabiah, and Jael, and Josabad, the chiefs of the Levites, gave unto the Levites for the Passover offering 5,000 small cattle and 500 oxen." What kind of numbers are we talking about here, Chris?
Approaching 50,000. Our numbers read slightly.
Okay. Over 40,000 animals. And they were killed to observe the Passover. Now let me ask you, you read anything like that? Even back to the days of Samuel. You talk about not observing the Passover at all. That had been the case for many, many years. And now look at what Josiah did. That's a lot of offerings. Over 40,000 animals slain to observe this Passover.
You wonder how long that would take, just the logistics and the time it would take and altars to sacrifice them on.
That was my immediate thought, yes.
Quite a,
what a task to take care of all these animals and prepare it as it was to be prepared, to be offered as a sacrifice. Now, some of it was burned. Some of it was boiled to be eaten. And so we see that, but even so, the preparation of this many animals to sacrifice and to cook, what a task. You see why then it's stated that nobody observed the Passover like this all the way back to Samuel. Changed, do it now. And I suppose we have become so used to procrastinating that we want to put it off. We see it, but it's not all that urgent. Josiah teaches us a valuable lesson here. Yes, it's urgent. Do it now. Make the change now. So anyway, I wanted you to see these numbers. I think they're impressive. Now, when you read on in the text, we've got a problem that's kind of on the horizon with Josiah. Josiah really didn't die at a ripe old age of some old age disease. You'll note in chapter 35, reading on down in verse 20, it says, "After all this, when Josiah had prepared the temple, Necho, king of Egypt, went up to fight against Carchemish by the Euphrates. And Josiah went out against him. But he sent ambassadors to him, saying, 'What have I to do with thee, thou king of Judah? I come not against thee this day, but against the house wherewith I have war. And God hath commanded me to make haste, forbear thee from meddling with God, who is with me, that he destroy thee not. Now, what did Josiah do?
Disguised himself so he could fight.
Yes. And then what happened to him?
He got shot.
He got shot. Yeah. He got shot, hit with an arrow. And the text tells us in verse 23, the archer shot at King Josiah, and the king said to his servants, "Have me away, for I am sore wounded." So his servants took him out of the chariot and put him in the second chariot that he had and brought him to Jerusalem, and he died and was buried in the sepulcher of his fathers. And all Judah and Jerusalem mourned for Josiah, and Jeremiah lamented for Josiah, and all the singing men and singing women spake of Josiah in their lamentations unto this day. And they made them an ordinance in Israel, and behold, they were written in the lamentations. Now the rest of the acts of Josiah and his good deeds according to that which was, or which is written in the law of Jehovah, and his acts, first and last, behold, are they written, or they are written in the book of the kings of Israel and Judah. Now what Hilda told Josiah through the messengers, that it's going to be bad, Jerusalem's going to fall, but you'll die first. Josiah's not told how he's going to die, but he dies in this engagement with the king of Egypt.
Do you have any idea of why he engaged with the king of Egypt?
That's an interesting question. I thought about that. And to answer your question, no. I really don't know a reason that would be definitive for him to do that. All it seems that Necho is doing is passing through. And he just wants the privilege of passing through. But Josiah engages him. I don't know why. Any thoughts or comments on that?
They were being taken over at that point, is that correct?
Egypt?
Egypt was taken over, right?
Well, Egypt is on their way to fight in Assyria.
Oh, okay.
And they have to pass through Judah to do that. And Josiah engages them in battle.
I was wondering about after Josiah's death, what were the conditions in Judah?
Well, after Josiah's death, we have a line of kings from him, none of them good.
Oh, okay, I kind of thought that, and the reason I ask is sometimes death is could be a blessing rather than a curse.
Well, it was certainly so in the case of Josiah.
Yeah.
He didn't live to see what God was going to do to these people. Yeah.
This appeared to be one of the cases where God actually spoke to Pharaoh.
That's what Pharaoh said.
Well, it says so in verse 22.
Yeah.
Josiah did not listen to the words of Necho from the mouth of God.
Came to fight.
Apparently Necho was coming to fight and God told him to.
That's what Necho said.
That's what Necho said. Verse 22 says that's what the mouth of God told Necho.
Yeah. And one of the things we want to make note of just here is the Assyrians had already engaged Egypt, if I have my chronology correct. And so now we've got Necho going to fight against the Assyrians. But what we see on the horizon is when you take a kingdom like the Assyrian Empire, it's now beginning to weaken. And it makes it possible then for the Babylonians to conquer them and come down and take Judah.
I would just see the plan of God being carried out here.
It is.
He said he was going to die before he was taken over.
Providence. God carried it out, just like you said. All right. We're out of time, so we'll stop with that.